let's play a word association game. When I say animal rights group, what comes to your mind? PETA, perhaps? If so, it's a testament to the group's ability to draw attention to itself and its causes. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is considered radical by some, but if their approach to animal rights is purist in its nature, they're not above using some showbiz to get their points across. PETA often enlists the help of naked women to attract the press to their demonstrations. The list of celebrities they've gotten to front their causes is much too long for me to recite. Let's just say that it includes both Pamela Anderson and the Dalai Lama. PETA was started in 1980 by Ingrid Newkirk and a group of volunteers. Today, Newkirk remains president of PETA, and she has a new book, which is called 50 Awesome Ways Kids Can Help Animals. She joins me in studio to talk about PETA and what that group is all about. And Ingrid, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you very much.
Ingrid, I know that PETA has a mission. Why don't you share it with us?
Well, if you insist, yes, that's our major goal, is to share it with the world. And that is to reach every living soul who cares about animals. Perhaps it's just the dog on the hearth or the cat they feed, but to have them extend that compassion to all the animals, because it shouldn't just be that we're kind to those we're familiar with or we find cute. It should be that we understand that all animals feel pain and joy and love, and they grieve. They don't want to die. They want to have happiness in their lives. And if we can be compassionate toward all of them, then I think that's a marvelous thing.
I think different people may have different definitions of what it means to be compassionate to animals. And I think people from the outside looking in at PETA might have the impression that PETA is opposed to any use or exploitation of animals by people. Would you say that that's accurate?
We're opposed to any abuse of animals whatsoever. And again, it doesn't matter what species. Could be one you find ugly and repulsive. Perhaps mice and rats who are used in laboratory tests, for example, they have things put down their throats, substances placed in their eyes. They feel the same pain and suffering as little mammals, as any of us would if we had that done to us. So yes, I mean, we say, look at what's on our plates, look at what we're wearing, think about all the animals.
Right, but would you say that you're against any kind of use? You say you're against abuse, and that's fine, but would you say that you're against really almost any kind of use or exploitation of animals? Is it your goal to create a nation of vegans, for instance?
Oh, that would be absolutely fabulous. Not only for the animals, but of course for earth resources. We're draining the aquifer to water cattle. We're polluting the rivers with that muck, the runoff from the hog farms. It would also be good for our arteries, since meat is clogging them. But yes, absolutely, that would be marvelous. The use of animals I don't equate necessarily with abuse, although much of our use is abuse, factory farming, fur farming, that kind of thing. But you certainly can have a symbiotic relationship with an animal where you benefit and the animal benefits. Hearing ear dogs, for example, come from animal shelters. That is not true of seeing eye dogs, but hearing ear dogs have a wonderful time. They learn all sorts of things. Their lives are very, very interesting, and they live with the family until they die.
Let me ask you about slaughterhouses, for instance. Do you believe in humane slaughterhouses? And do you believe that there is such a thing as a humane slaughterhouse?
Let me say there probably is no humane slaughterhouse in this country or almost anywhere. And I have been all over the world looking inside slaughterhouses, including dog slaughterhouses in China. They are all hideous places. You wouldn't picnic in them. You would probably lose your lunch from going inside them. But what we do, we have to work at a pragmatic level. So while we say to people, please consider veganism for a million different good reasons, and we'll help you with recipes and cookbooks and what have you, please also, if you're going to continue to eat meat, then help pressure the companies like KFC and McDonald's and so on to at least have something like controlled atmosphere killing. And people are stunned that we would suggest a more humane killing method. But the thing is, the amount of suffering is so grand with billions upon billions of chickens, for example, and they feel pain and they die badly, having their wings and their legs bruised when they're shackled, going alive into the scalding tank because somebody missed them with the knife. It would be much better, realistically, because so many people are going to continue to eat meat, to make their dying process less ugly.
What about hunting? Is there such a thing as humane hunting in the opinion of PETA? Is there such a thing as a humane zoo or a circus?
Well, again, I think you've got to look at what's happening generally. There are humane zoos. The Detroit Zoo is now run by a wonderful director who has voluntarily closed the elephant exhibit because he's come to the conclusion that elephants deserve to remain in their homelands and that we should not be breeding elephants, taking the babies away from the mother and so on. The circus has evolved. We now have Cirque du Soleil, which means paid human performers. But the animal circus is an old atrocity. The old menageries, which are what many of the zoos today are atrocities, because there is no real thought for what animals need, how to meet their behavioral requirements, their environmental requirements, and so on.
Do you mind if I ask you a question about the San Diego Zoo? The San Diego Zoo has elephants, and I think that PETA has been known to come and protest at our zoo.
We have indeed, because the San Diego Zoo has made some really appalling decisions over the opinions of elephant experts who have begged them not to move, for example, some of their older elephants to a colder climate in Chicago, which they did. And within just a matter of some months, those elephants were dead. Within 2 years, I think every elephant that transferred to Chicago was dead. We beg them not to do that. We've also begged them to stop being part of the importation of baby elephants from Zimbabwe. These are elephants who wake up screaming in the middle of the night. The people who watch them in the corrals say that they're so traumatized by being separated from their herd. You know, herd is a matriarchy with mothers and aunts and so on. Those females stay in that herd for a lifetime. They do not need to be shipped here or flown here to the United States and put on display.
My guest is Ingrid Newkirk. She's president and co-founder of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, better known as PETA. And she's author of a new book, which is called 50 Awesome Ways Kids Can Help Animals. You have been quoted as saying, some would say admitting, that PETA is now outside the mainstream.
I think when we started, we were definitely about as outside the mainstream as a person or a group could get, because our credo is animals are not ours to eat, wear, experiment on, or use for entertainment. And back 25 years ago, when we started, people would do a double take. Now, and one of the reasons I've written the kids' book, is because kids coming up are like the kids who taught us about how to recycle, taught us about the environmental movement, taught us not to use hardwoods and so on. The kids today are tuned in to the fact they don't need animals. They've got computers in school. They don't need to cut up that frog. They want the faux fur and the faux fleece. They don't want to have a dead animal around their neck. So there is a movement. I don't think we're way outside the mainstream anymore. I think that the mainstream has incorporated animal rights concerns, not wholly.
Let's talk a little bit about the ways in which you've drawn attention to your causes. You have said that PETA may seem flamboyant and outrageous, but that's because it's part of your business plan. Part of your business plan?
What has happened, I think everybody who reads the newspaper or turns on television knows, is that it's very, very hard to compete with news about war. Sex is a big seller. Everybody wants to know what Pam Anderson is going to do. And I would much rather that, as we did in the old days, you could simply have discourse on an issue and point out the cruelties in places like laboratories and have people say, what are my options? And then, of course, our job is to provide them, which we do. But in order to get that message out, we have to somehow make complete idiots of ourselves, take off our clothes and cavort about or make a joke of something.
Well, do you think that some people roll their eyes when they see a PETA-sponsored event involving naked protesters, for instance?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Many, many people do. But they also start discussing it. And had we not done that, there would be absolute silence and no discussion. So silence is the enemy of any social cause, and our job is to put this this issue before the public.
Do you think that people, and I'm trying to say this without sounding like I have a poor opinion of Pamela Anderson, but do you think that people respect the views of people like Pamela Anderson?
Well, let's say this, that they may not respect her views in all regards, but she's a self-made woman, and she certainly gets people's attention. And everybody turns to look if Pam is on a poster saying, I'd rather go naked than wear fur. Also, her website gets so many hits, and she has a direct link to our website on her website, so people may come to Gawk and then get some reality and learn something about animals they didn't know and make a new choice, maybe go vegetarian, who knows?
Once again, Ingrid Newkirk is my guest. She's president and co-founder of the People of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Recently, your group expressed some outrage over a live nativity scene in Alaska. Turns out it was a mistake. Apparently, there were no animals involved in that nativity scene. But I'm wondering, is it really cruel using animals in a live nativity scene?
Yes, actually, we had sent a form letter to everyone who had said, every church and other group that we had found that advertised a live nativity scene, which usually means animals. In this case, luckily, they were just using people dressed up. But we've had terrible accidents with animals breaking out of the corral, getting hit by cars, vandals, young people breaking in and hurting the animals, actually setting fire to animals in some situations, and animals being left out in all weather, people not realizing that something was a cold front was coming through. We've had animals die in manger scenes. So we're saying, yes, step away and have some consideration. There are lots of other ways to enjoy ourselves and make a religious point.
One other tactic apparently you use in your activism is to buy shares of stock in fast food companies like KFC, McDonald's, and I suppose you do that to, in order, well, maybe you can just tell me, why do you do that?
It's an effective way to reach the major shareholders, in fact, all the shareholders, with a serious issue to do with the company. For example, this controlled atmosphere killing project that we have to try to have the chickens knocked unconscious before they go through what's a very abusive and painful process on the slaughter line.
In other words, gassing them.
Yes.
To put it
yes,
simply.
It's inert gases, absolutely painless, doesn't affect the meat. That would be marvelous if they would institute that, but it takes a corporate decision, and we're able to go to the shareholders and say, will you support this? Any social cause group knows that you're not going to win at that level, but you can have some compromise, some discussion as a result of showing how many people do care about it when the vote comes in.
And I suppose that also allows you to bring shareholder lawsuits in some situations, or have you not done that?
We haven't done that because we have always managed to bring the corporation to the negotiating table. We have a group of people, a division within PETA, that actually works with corporations to find options for them that are humane and to help them make the switch.
Can we know what animals want? And does it require an understanding of the minds of animals to understand what really constitutes cruelty to them?
I think it's easy. I think it's just common sense. But if one wishes to look at studies of animals to know what they feel, there are ample studies available that show that they certainly feel pain. I mean, there is no reason that an animal, any of us, would flee from something unless it hurt us or it frightened us. And you certainly see studies in which physical wounds are caused to animals. And if you look at any of our videos on PETA.org, from the fur farm, animals being skinned alive for fur, absolutely atrocious things in the slaughterhouse and in the circus. You just see the looks on the animals' faces. You see their hair stand on end. You see their tails go between their legs. You see them struggle to escape. And you see what is done to them. And nobody could ever question that it's miserable. It needs to stop.
But what about a zoo, for instance? You can look at a typical zoo. I'm not talking about one where it has a huge amount of acreage. You can look at a typical zoo and you can say, oh, this large animal is in this small space. He must not like it. But I think some people might question that.
Well, I think you can see very clearly there are conditions called zoocoses that have been identified, which are like psychoses. For example, in the old bedlam or the mental institutions before there were changes made, people rocked back and forth. People banged their heads against the walls. People actually chewed into their own flesh. All that happens with zoocoses, where you see animals turning and turning and turning in the same spot, stepping on the same leg and back, and same leg and back. They will pull their own hair out. They will come up with these repetitive patterns of behavior. There is, in New York, there was a polar bear who became quite famous because they actually had to put him on antidepressants. He was on some sort of Prozac because he was just so miserable. You know, behaviorists who study animals certainly have a long list of case studies of the worst of zoos and what it does to animals. Intensive confinement, being deprived of all ability to make decisions, is a big thing for most of us who have minds, and animals certainly have minds.
Ingrid Newkirk is president and co-founder of PETA. Tell us about your book. You've written a book which is called 50 Awesome Ways Kids Can Help Animals.
Oh, I'm cheating, really. The kids wrote it.
All right.
The kids send me drawings, poems, jokes, wonderful jokes and really bad jokes, and all their stories about what they've done to help animals. Setting up a neighborhood animal watch, or going to see their science teacher and demanding that they use Ribbit, the cloth frog, or a computer program instead of a live frog. They're just fabulous. And so I collected all their stories and their wonderful work, poems, and put them into a book. It says 50 awesome ways, but I think there are about 2,000 awesome ways that they've contributed to this book.
Let me end by asking you a question about medical science and animal trials that I know that you oppose. If it weren't for animal trials, would medical science progress? And what's the alternative, if not experimenting on humans?
I think we have wasted so much money on animal experiments. If you just take animal suffering out of the equation, you can go to the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, for example. They're a wonderful group, puts all doctors who put up alternatives to animal experiments. It's the 21st century. We have fabulous things we can do with high-speed computers programmed with human data. We have technology. We have cloning of whole human skin, of cells. DNA is, our own DNA is on the internet. Marvelous things, and yet we still take monkeys from the wild, open up their heads, put electrodes in them, shove them in a small cage, make them go psychotic, and pretend that we're stuffing something they don't even get.
Well, Ingrid, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Ingrid Newkirk is president and co-founder of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and she is the author of a new book called 50 Awesome Ways Kids Can Help Animals, Fun and Easy Ways to Be a Kind Kid.